Everything's rolling good. Today is April 30th, 2017, Sunday, and here in Israel, it's a sad moment. It's Yom HaZikaron tonight, tomorrow, and everyone's aware of the Akedat Yitzchak and how many Karbanot we have brought that the Jewish people should live on and the state of Israel should thrive. Halavai. We shouldn't have any more kabbanot. It should just be ma'aseni sim. I also want to mention, I want to dedicate the shir. It's a very interesting shir today. I want to dedicate it in memory of Yosef Yuspa ben Svi Meir Jacobs. Don't know how many of you recognize the name. It's his first yahrzeit. Joe Jacobs was the son of Harold and Pearl Jacobs. Harold, if you ever study the history of Orthodoxy in America, he was one of the prime lay leaders, president of the Young Israel, president of the OU, very active, a real Ben Torah, a real Balabas who fought for Torah standards when it wasn't fashionable yet. Left a beautiful family. I know his daughter married a classmate, he was a year or two ahead of me in yeshiva, but a contemporary of mine. And there's a son married into the Reichman family. And then there's this son, who was also a fine individual, a fine Ben Torah, died rather young. And today is the first yahrzeit. I'll also mention that Yosef's son, Uri, is a Talmud of mine via the internet for years already. So Yehei Zichro Baruch, and we should only have happy moments to talk about. Now, last week we spoke about that problem of going to the Fabrengen and davening Mincha 11 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock at night, long after the Zman. Yehoshua Rabbi Grinstein writes, "Dear Rebbe, inspired on your talk on Sunday when Rabbi Menashe Klein tried, but doesn't succeed to justify the Hasidic Rebbe that davens Mincha at 11 p.m. So I'd share the following. Turns out that the Gushnikim do not say Tachanun on what is perceived to be the Litvak Moriah Rebbe, Rabbi Lichtenstein's yard site. But you know why they don't say Tachanun? Because it falls on Rosh Chodesh Iyar. So you follow Rabbi Aaron Ruzaycha that you don't have to have, you know, Hasidim don't say Tachanun on a yard site. I've been in Hasidic shuls where they actually have a calendar. I couldn't believe my eyes. And every day they give you a different yard site of a Rebbe, a Shtikle Rebbe, and the Gabbai gives a clap and he mentions it's the yard site of this Rebbe, and that's it. There's no Tachman. I have in the Rav why Chassidim, I quote Rebbe in the second volume, I believe it is, why Chassidim don't like to say Tachman. And essentially, it's your attitude towards life. A chassid has a jovial attitude, a happy attitude. Whatever God does, this is good. I have to accept it. I have to be happy. Some like a litvak, who is constantly thinking and constantly analyzing. So, and this is why the Rav said the chassidim told Shabbos so much later than the Litvak. And that's when the Rav told the story of the time he missed, he overslept, and he missed Maariv in Warsaw. And here it's already, the stores are open, it's Vachadik, it's Saturday night, and he needs a minion for Saturday night, for Matzoi Shabbos. And that's that unbelievable story where he goes to the Majitz, the Shtibel, and they're in the middle of Bnei Chachalin and the Mizma LeDavid and Sudash LeShit. And he asked this Jew, "Ven vet men davenim Maariv? When will we daven Maariv?" And the Jew looks at him, this Chassidic Jew looks at him and says, "Vashi Yingle, what's with you, youngster? Du bangst nach dem Vach? You're longing for the week?" And boy, that is quite a powerful story. What to long, what do we long for? Chassidim can't let go of the Kedusha. And ain't hachinami, if you know Litvakim, They're looking at the clock. That's it. Maariv, time to daven, get on with the week, whatever we have to do. All right, be it as it may, it was a very fascinating tshuva. And halacha l'maisa, there's no justification for davening mincha 11 o'clock at night. But as I told Rav Heschel Schechter, we fought that battle 200 plus years ago and we lost. Justification, very hard to come by. But I don't believe in the year 2017 we can put chassidim into cheirim because they're not makpidim zmanei tefillah. I don't recommend it. I hope that they'll all come back to zmanei tefillah, but that machloket has to stand and not cause fire or turmoil. All right, now a very fascinating question that he deals with, and he doesn't realize what he's dealing with and what it means to a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik, someone like myself. I'm referring to Chelek Yud Aleph, Mishnah Halachat, Chelek Yud Aleph, Siman Kuf Zayin. And let me go back and tell you something I've mentioned many times. The Rav came into New York from Boston. There were various periods in the Rav's life. I remember in the 50s, he came in by car. Who drove? The Rebbetzin drove. The Rav they got a license, drove one time, banged into a tree, and the Balabatim, this is a true story, out of Boston, the Balabatim went to him and said, Rebbe, driving is not for someone who's thinking about a Rambam. And they pleaded with him not to drive. They also pleaded with him. He wore funny hats in Boston. And they pleaded with him to wear a Rabbanish hat. And the Rav said, we're driving, you're right. My wife will drive. But as far as dress, that you can't tell me how to dress. And he told him about Rav Chaim, how Rav Chaim dressed like a balabas. You would never guess that that was Rav Chaim Briska. All right, be it as it may, the Rebbetzin drove in. So I can still remember it was a 1949 or 1950 Dodge, black, and it was parked right on Amsterdam Avenue. When did she drive in? They drove in on Monday early. Was evidently they stopped in the middle. It was a Yitzchak, what is it, a 4.5 hour drive from Boston to New York? 4.5 hours, so probably they stopped, they took their time. Generally speaking, if the Rove drove in on Monday and said Shia Monday, and there were weeks where he said Shia Monday, Tuesday, not Tuesday, Wednesday, Alex, so right after Shia, the Rove would give a bang and say, "If daf machen a minyan fa kriyas ha-teira, since da divas ob nishko het kriyas ha-teira, the difri magana there." Kids here who didn't daven with the minyan and didn't hear Kriyat HaTorah. I can assure you that the Rav had no problem getting a minyan of students who missed davening with a minyan, were there in Shia. Majority of the kids were not from the YU. I didn't live in YU, I should say. I didn't live in the dorm. And minyanim were hard to come by in the Bronx. There were minyanim 6:30 in the morning. People went to work. But after that, it was very hard to find a minion, the Bronx, Manhattan. The Rav had no trouble making a minion. So what did he do? Ashrei Yoshvei Veitecha, and then Chotzat HaTorah, Kriyat HaTorah, and then Shmon Esrei of Mincha. No, what do you see from here? That davening, hearing Kriyat HaTorah, it's not, you see, you can view Kriyas HaTorah. It's a Gemara in Baba Kama, Daf Pebet, if I'm not mistaken, Parav Pebet, the Sugya. Hachu Shloshe Yamim Belo Torah Nilu. The Rav gave many drushet on this, that if you go 3 days without hearing Torah, you Nilu, it's hard to translate, but it means you become tired, spiritually tired. You lose the good feeling of being a good Jew, spiritually tired. Am I translating? I think that's the best word, nilul. So Chazal mitaken, every 3 days you have to read Torah, Shabbos, Monday, Thursday. Now, what's the takon of Kriyat HaTorah? Does it mean Monday, Thursday, or is it tied in with Shachrit? it's something part of the davening shachrit you have, Kriyat Torah. If you miss shachrit with the minyan, that's it. You can't take Kriyat Torah and read it at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It is tied in with shachrit. Or no, it's a halacha, 3 days without Torah. You don't have to have davening. It's nothing to do with davening. It's just, Minhag Yisrael is to read it at shachrit. The mincha is hard to break up the day. People work, people are doing things. So you're not going to break up the day with Kriyat Satera. But Shabbat, but Monday, Thursday morning, you daven with shachrit. But if you missed it, why can't you fill it in? Now, you want a proof to the Rav's thinking? It's very simple. The Rav used to talk about Rav Chaim. The Rav used to say about Rav Chaim, as Givena Meshunadik Machmir, then das Kumse Kriya Satera. To translate that, Rav Chaim was a Meshunadik. How would you translate Meshunadik? A unique, a different type of machmir. It was iconoclastic. He was so machmir. And the Rav used to tell stories about Rav Chaim that when he traveled, he would get off the train. Let's say he was traveling, for the sake of argument, to Vilna or to Voloshin, and you're passing through Vilna, he would get off the train in Vilna in order to catch Kriyas HaTeira. Then he would have to wait hours to get a train again that was going to where he was going. Now, I'll give you another example. In our own lives, the calendar in Israel, the calendar in America, occasionally conflict. What do I mean occasionally conflict? When Yom Tov falls on Shabbos, let's say second day Yom Tov in America, we're reading a regular Pascha and they're not reading. So then you have people coming to Israel and we're one Pascha ahead. No, what do you do? So you know that you have Minyanim here where they announce in advance they're going to read the two Pashiyot. What they do is they call up a Kohen and they read the whole Pasha that they're missing, and Kohen of the Pasha of the Shabbat. So you see from there, it's also, it's not a halacha that this said with this Shabbat. There's a halacha you have to read. Our minig is to read the Torah once a year. And in order to read the Torah once a year, you can adjust the Pashiyot. And this would seem to support the Rav's point of view, Rav Chaim's point of view. However, this viewpoint was not unanimous. And here, in Chelek Yudalef, Mishnah Lachot, Siman Kuf Zayin, he has this exact question. And he says, he was asked, he doesn't tell you who asked him the question, Malot Kvod Yedidi, my dear friend, and you asked me about if you miss davening Monday, Thursday morning, and you couldn't read the Torah, can you read it Monday and Thursday afternoon at Mincha? And Reb Menashe Klein says, absolutely not. He takes the viewpoint that Kriyas HaTeira is linked, it is locked in with Tfilat Shachrit. And if you're not going to read, if you're not going to read it at Shachrit, you can't read it Monday or Thursday afternoon. He said that. The Rav said absolutely. The Rav felt it,
yeah,
absolutely. And he takes that, and then now he tells a story. And this story is out of modern life. It's a problem we all have. We fly on El Al. You fly on El Al, all right, you can make a minyan. Planes put up with these minyanim. It's not the easiest in the world. You're standing in the aisle, you're blocking people. We tend to go to the back of the plane to make a minyan. I was once on a plane coming from Switzerland with Rav Ovadia Yosef. And he got so upset in the middle of davening with the way he walked away, sat down, and continued davening in his seat. But generally speaking, we make a minyan. But no plane has a safer Torah. Aaron Rakefet said many years ago, but Rakefet may be ahead of his time, with all the competition between the airlines, El Al should design a new plane with an open area for 20 people to stand to, and have a Sefer Torah on the plane. And then you put ads into Ami, into Mishpacha, into all the from newspapers, into Makor Rishon. We are the only airline that has a Sefer Torah for you. Okay? But as usual, Rakefet speaks, no one listens, everyone laughs. So we wind up with a thought that perhaps will not come to fruition. But what a fabulous idea. Can Delta boast that they have a Sefer Torah? Can United Airlines boast that they have a Sefer Torah? Well, what is the Airfloat? Can Airfloat boast that they have a Sefer Torah? It's miraculous that they have kosher food today. So look what happened to me. Tells the following stories. This is what I love about Rav Menashe Klein. He's a human being. He brings life in. He says, let me tell you what happened to me a few weeks ago. I flew to Israel. And when I got out of the plane in Lod in the afternoon, a very important Rosh Yeshiva who was also on the plane came over to me and said to me, I quote, we didn't have the Sefer Torah on the plane and today was Monday, we should have read the Torah. Let's go into the Beis HaMedrash in the airport and take out a Sefer Torah and read. And you all know in Lod Airport, there is a shul, a dedicated shul USA, in Kennedy Airport. There's a place of prayer, but it's not in Kodesh. They have a separate shul today? Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah, I mean, parking also.
Very nice, very nice. So there it's better than it used to be. Or maybe I was once in a different airport, yeah, where they said you can daven. It's a spiritual room, a room of spirituality. And they cover up, there's a cross there, they cover it up, whatever. But a dedicated shul, and in Lod Airport, there's a dedicated shul. Let's go in, take out a Torah, and we will read the Torah. Exactly to solve the problem, we missed hearing the Torah in the morning. And I told him, we can't do it, because this is not our tradition. And being an Ungarische, being Hungarian, he quotes a story. It's well known that the Chatam Sofer traveled through Matisdorf on his way to a different location. And he dropped off in this village. It was the afternoon. They hadn't read the Torah in the morning. They were on the train, or they were on whatever vehicle they were traveling with. I don't know if there were trains yet. The Chatam Sofer's time, he died 1837, I believe so. Perhaps there were no trains yet.
Wagons,
whatever. They didn't have a Sefer Torah, but now they reached Matisdorf, and he wanted to read the Torah, and he said no. He thought about it, and he said, no, I don't see that we can read it. It's after Shacharit, the time is gone, and I don't believe we can read it. And then he brings down a whole slew of Hungarian achronim who dealt with this problem, argued back and forth, gave the svara that I gave, that perhaps it's Talui in the day, not in Shacharit. And nevertheless, the majority of the Hungarian poskim, you cannot read the Torah in the mincha, only in Shacharit. And he quotes one of the late Reb Shimon Greenwald. He already was a great posek, the Mashag, a great posek in Hungary 100 years ago. And he writes about World War I, that many times the fighting was going on, shooting was going on. They couldn't come to the shul in the morning. It was sakonat nefashot. But by the afternoon, the fighting subsided. And they still, even though they made a minyan in the afternoon, they did not read the Torah. Halacha l'maisa, it is time in with shacharit. So you see, you have here a machleket haposkim, halacha lemaiska. I would paskin like the Rav, I would paskin like Reb Chaim, I'm a Litvak, anyone here of Hungarian origins, you have a problem. A Litvak doesn't.
Why are you stuck? Just because I come from Hungary doesn't
mean
I have to go back.
Yitzhak, you are not a. You come from Hungary, but you studied, you became an honorary Litvak. For all the years you were in, all the years you were in Maimonides and in YU. Okay?
Now, by the way, post-SOC,
yeah.
Soldiers of the American Army.
Right.
The only time you can get
Friday night.
Thursday night.
Friday night.
You read the Torah.
Without bracha. I know, a lot has been written on that. You can read the Torah at night, but you certainly can't make bracha at night. And that's the big problem with Simchas Torah. Simchas Torah is a holiday that grew up among the Jewish people that has many features which are not halachic. Who ever heard of giving everyone an aliyah? Yontif, how many aliyah do you have? 5 aliyah. Open Mishnah, right or wrong. Open Sukkah, Megillah, Masechet Megillah. Yom Kippur you have 6. Shabbos you have 7. Simchas Torah, everyone gets an aliyah. Kol Hanarim, who ever heard of calling up kids? You see, the holiday grew up from the Jewish people. They have an adult. They have an adult. Kol Hanarim, it's called. Kol Hanarim.
I know, but I used to buy it all the time.
Okay.
The adult buys it.
Right, and you give the kids. Okay. Okay, so. And Kriyat HaTorah at night. But what can you do? The Jew. I don't lane in my shul. I used to tell them we can't lane, but it's a whole machlokes about the Vilna Gaon. Did he lane? Didn't he lane? I always thought he didn't lane. Here I heard in certain shuls they say he did lane. We'll never know. But there's certain good minchagim that grew up among the Jewish people. Hallel Leil HaSeda. Saying Hallel Leil HaSeda doesn't make any sense.
Amariv,
Leil HaSeda, before davening, before the Reb Chaim was very opposed. What are you talking? There's a story with Reb Velvel, if I have it right, I saw the story many times, that Leil HaSeda, walking home from shul to his father's house for the Seda, he told his father he stopped in the Hasidic shul and how beautiful they were singing the Hallel. And his father got upset, singing Hallel at night. You're going to have it, Jim. I'm going to have it two nights from now. Two nights from now, I'm going to have exactly that problem. No, what am I talking about? Leil Atzmaut. I have to daven in my children's shul because they asked me to speak between tomorrow night. They asked me to speak between Mincha and tomorrow. Fine. They're going to daven Hallel at night. Rav Gorman introduced Hallel. It should be like Leil HaSeda. Leil HaSeda, Efsha, you can be justified. You can justify it that you're saying Hallel to say the bracha because you don't say a bracha during the meal. You follow? During the meal, you split the Hallel. I generally don't get me started. I have a lot of Torah in my veins, but I want to teach today a lot of Torah. But we don't say a bracha. How can you say a bracha? First, you say 2 Pirkei Tehillim, the first 2 Prakim of Hallel. Then you eat a tremendous meal. That's a different story. That we know. That's a Makloikis and Taisvis. But then you pick up the second part of Hallel after the meal, so you don't say a bracha. So there is a svara that the reason we say Hallel and Shul is to be able to say a bracha, and if you're a Talmud Chacham, when you say the Hallel, you have kavana for that bracha to cover the meal as well. You follow me, Natan? Okay. Leil Atzmaut, Rav Gorin said, it's no different than Pesach, the miracles that happened here. Leil HaSeda, we say Hallel in the night and in the morning. Believe me, in my son-in-law shul, they're going to say Hallel at night, and I'll have to say Hallel, but I won't say a bracha. I'll say it, Pirkei Tehillim. But what can we do? This is Klal Yisrael decided. It's not Gedolei Yisrael who are sitting with Lamdis. These are the Hamon Ha'am, what the Rav Heschel Schechter referred to in his talk time and again as the Balabatim. But these are the Balabatim who saved Yiddishkeit, who gave us Yiddishkeit, who enabled us to be sitting here talking Torah thousands of years after Matan Torah and our exile and all that we've gone through. Okay, now we come to the major topic for today. And I have to tell you, it's a sad topic. And it's all part of my realization in my old age. I have to admit, I feel very bad. I have to raise my hands as a Litvak and say the Hasidim are right and encourage everyone to be a Hasid. It's sad for me. I'm a Litvak. I come from a world of Gatlet, of Torah, of learning, of knowledge. I've been a Chamit Nagid, a Litvak, Rufni Vasivil. By the way, Avram, I have to tell you, he gave Harav Mizrahi, right? I heard a talk now, wow, that he hit Chabad hard, that the Makarev Jews, they don't call him a Machado. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
With Douglas, Kirk Douglas, with his son. Anyway, is he always like that? Wow, he hit Lubavitch hard. Anyway, it's not for now. I just wanted to tell you.
They would have been saying things about Chabad, honestly.
You never heard. Okay, but I have it on. I have it
what,
in his.
What's the motivation for a person to just not?
Yitzhak, not now. Well, he feels you take a Mahalo Shabbos, opening the Vedit and Treifet, and you fawn over him. It's a very delicate question. I read Rothkopf's book on Rabbi Revel. Did you read Rothkopf's book? Okay, I studied it well. Believe me, long before three more editions came out. And Rothkopf, in his doctorate, raises the problem, how do you honor Senator Herbert Liebman, how do you honor Albert Einstein, if there is Yitzhak Rubin sitting in the student body, and we're telling Yitzhak Rubin you have to be a Shema Shabbos and a Shema Kashrut, and you have to daven three times a day, and here we're honoring Albert Einstein, he knew how to hold the sitter. Here we're honoring Herbert Lehman. He knew how to read Hebrew. What are we talking about? You understand? It's a delicate question. So he comes down. But I'm not here to... I don't agree with him. I can justify Chabad in 1 second flat. But that's not the point. Herb, one second. I can justify Chabad in 1 second flat, but that's not the point. Avram Rachman has very high regard for Rabbi Mizrahi. And I just want to bounce off him. Is he aware? Evidently, there was feedback negative against his criticizing Chabad, because he spoke afterwards, a week later, that I have the Rebbe's books in my house, but it's not that I'm criticizing the Rebbe, I'm criticizing this type of obsequious behavior over Mechalel Shabbos, Okling, the Begit, and Trefet, Boil, Bilot, Asur, and I'm quoting him now. It's a delicate problem. Don't dismiss it. We view it Tinokot Shenishbu. You understand? And we're going to see that soon. Herb, what did you want to say?
These guys give them millions. It's for money.
Please, don't put Chabad just for money. It's a lot deeper than that. They go with the Shita that since the Tinokot Shenishbu, look into the Rambam, Hilchot Mamrim, Perik Bet, Halacha Gimel, Halacha Dalet, you have to be makavrim b'divrei ahava. Look at the Rambam. And Baruch Hashem, Chabad has tremendous success. Breslov has tremendous success. You don't get anywhere by using vinegar. But nevertheless, it's a problem that has to be discussed and has to be articulated. With YU, it's not a simple matter. The 1930s, there was tremendous criticism. You give Herbert Lehman. All right, you might say, well, at that time, there were no from Jews on that level. These were the Jews, and we want to show we're a Jewish institution. We want to catch on. We want to mainstream. So they honored Lehman and Einstein. And the truth is, with Einstein, he gave his name to the medical school. I needn't go further. What that meant for YU. We thought Messiah was arriving. You can't believe we were kids in the yeshiva. How happy we were. Go and dream that so many decades later, YU would sell off the medical school and go back to what originally was a yeshiva with secular institutions that all had to do with Judaism. Okay, but gentlemen, let's go a step further. I always thought when Yitzchak and I were raised, I cannot stop to tell you who Rav Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lesson was and what Musa meant. And some of you know me, I'm not a youngster, and I've taught, in the classroom, at least over 11,000 students, if not more. If I include who I taught in the army, and taught in Russia and taught all over the world, where we're talking 30,000 plus students. All right, my life is an open book. No one can accuse me of ever selling the Torah. Some of you know I don't touch money. I don't even my own books. People come to me, can we buy your books? I send them to the publisher. I don't touch money on principle because we've seen too many scandals. But in order to be a Ben Torah, to be a Musenik, to be a Litvak, to be a Talmud of Rav Lesson, to be a Talmud of the Rav, you have to work on yourself. And I can't understand. You reach a certain point, I can't understand how from Jews who are Shomer Shabbos do bad things. It's beyond my comprehension. Mamish beyond my comprehension. I don't have to tell you more. I've taught the nicest, most beautiful, fabulous young ladies in the world, young men. Oh, the people I taught with Evra, one word of scandal. How can a Rebbe, I can't even articulate it, let me not even articulate it. How can a Rebbe do something bad to a student? How can you? If you believe in Torah, you're the Rebbe, you represent, it's beyond my comprehension. But the world is the world, and the Musenics and the Litvakin, we are a minority. The Hasidim have an advantage over us. They recognize that the average person is not going to be a tzaddik, is not going to be a gong, but give him emotion, give him attachment, give him a Rebbe, and we'll hold on to him Yiddishkeit-wise. And I have to say, it works. With all the problems of Mincha Shelo Bizman, and I choke when I come to Ohel Rivka. I remember the founders. I came, started dabbling in Ohel Rivka in 1969. And I remember the old timers, if they saw what's going on in the shul today, they would turn over in their graves. They'd be hysterical. They'd come back to life and beat the hell out of the present Balabatim. We have 3 Minyanim Shabbos, 6:30. Well, I'm davening since 69. I can give you a list of Gedolei Yisrael who davened that this minyan. And I can be Meyed Olai, Shemaim Varetz, that I'm now going to Shas a third time. Allah say the word by word with Mishainim. It's only because I daven at that 6:30 minyan. By 8 o'clock, if we're not finished, we shoot the chazan and out we go. We're home, Kiddush. You start learning, I wake up my wife, kick her out to shul. Over the years, I used to wake up my wife, my daughters, kick them out to shul. Oh boy. But then we have a second minyan, 8:15. Then, 10 o'clock, I think it is, the Chabadnikim in the side room, and they daven. And when I come into Mincha, 1:30 this Shabbos afternoon, you could smell the kugels, they fabringen. They must have finished davening 12 o'clock, 12:30. They're sitting with kugel and vodka. Herbie, why be negative? Be positive.
I'll tell you, in my mind, davening at 6:30 in the morning, davening an hour and a half shacharit and Shabbat is a much bigger b'dieved than davening late.
Well, you've heard a good chassid. You've heard a good chassid speak, but I hope you don't get me into trouble. Last time I got into such trouble because of your comment on charedim. I don't want to go into it. Why I didn't differ with you? So let it be said.
Well,
no
all
one.
I can say
no
there, one. Rebbe, is, You fetch a lot, I understand. You fetch a lot about the quote-unquote intellectual dishonesty.
Relax.
There's plenty of intellectual dishonesty everywhere.
We're not talking in right-wing and left-wing now. We're talking the reality that the average Jew can't be a disciple of Rabbi Israel Salanta. And it took me 200 years to realize that. 200 years, basically.
What the teachings of Rabbats prescribe are much more intense than what Rabbi Israel Salanta.
No, the same. But I see the Hasidic movement. Everyone, you can be a Gon, you can be a Tzaddik, you can be a lot less, but you have a connection. There's a certain feeling they have. Okay. Due to the reality of the modern world, there's tremendous pressure on us in the modern world. If you want to call it, I call it wine, women, and song. You all know that let's make merry, tomorrow we will die. The words of the prophet, tremendous pressure. And people succumb. And particularly criminal activity, we never heard basically of so many crimes among Jews. But the reality is that we do have many Jews in jail today. And this has nothing to do with black or white. It's all types, all types. It's across the board.
The worst thing is that the guy from Muncie was sold trade. That
The guy from Muncie sold Trey, ran away from America because they not going to extradite him. Had he remained in America, he too would be in jail. But these crimes go on, go on, go on. All right. As a Litvak, I remember when I did my research on my doctorate, I remember I found documents in the 1930s. There was a Jew with a beard. I have the documents. A Jew with a beard going to jail, white crime, money crime, and he's pleading with Dr. Revel to write a letter to the head of the jails in the federal penitentiary in New York that he should be allowed to keep his beard on. And I remember Professor Honig, Sidney B. Honig, again a name that means nothing to you, but one of the key people in YU in the 30s into the 40s into the 50s, telling me he was on my committee for my doctorate, you can't write about this letter. It'll make Orthodox Jews look bad. Okay? Now, why this whole introduction? Believe it or not, Mishnah Halachot, Chelik Tet Vav, Siman Mem Chet, Adasville. Am I pronouncing it right? The federal penitentiary in Adasville enters into the responsive
where is
literature. Federal Correctional Institution, I'm quoting from the Wikipedia, Adasville. It is a medium security United States federal prison for male inmates near Adasville, New York. It is operated by the Federal Bureau of Prisons, a division of the United States Department of Justice. It also includes a satellite prison camp for minimum security male offenders. Adasville is located in southeastern New York State near the Pennsylvania and New Jersey borders, 70 miles northwest of New York City. Wow. And then it has a whole section on notable inmates, current and former. And here you have one of the people, Shalom Lubashkin. Recognize the name? Serving a 20-year sentence scheduled for release in 2033. Former CEO of Agriprocessors, once the largest kosher slaughterhouse in the United States, convicted of fraud for deceiving his lender, First Bank Business Capital, to receive loans totaling $26 million. The story was featured on CNBC television show American Greed. Now, a lot has been written. We all know about him and the workers he hired. And I have to say that the 27-year-old sentence was way, way beyond what he deserved, in my humble opinion. I hope that perhaps with Trump as president, instead of the drug addicts being pardoned, getting chaninas, what happened with our past president, perhaps Trump will be good enough. He served already enough time.
How about Jonathan Pollard?
To pardon him. What'd you say?
How about Jonathan Pollard?
Jonathan Pollard, we hope will remove the restrictions on him. Ain't
hachinamas.
No, no.
That's
no,
like jail.
No, no. Pollard is not, no, it's not in jail.
It is like jail.
He's with his wife, but there are restrictions on him. Okay, now.
Legal experts said that the sentence was outrageous.
Who said it was outrageous?
A lot of legal experts.
No, no, I'm not a legal expert, but 27 years for, all right, fraud. They tell me the worst part was he was out in bail. And part of the deceiving went on when he was out in bail. And they say in America, if you play games when you're out in bail, they come down very hard on you. Weinstein of Lakewood, the guy who had that Ponzi scheme, also got, I think, 25 years. And the judge said, I would have given you a lot less, but if you could defraud banks when you're out in bail, it shows, to use Musa terminology, which I'm sure the judge didn't use, it shows the ganze mahus mensch, the entire person, is verdorben. There's something really the matter with him. Now, the question, this tshuva is so fascinating. It's to Rabbi Yechiel Isaac Itchkevitz. Yididi v'chabibi, harav ha'chovetz, evidently a Hasidish guy who does outreach in the jail. And he writes to him, you asked me the question about Adasville. Look, I want to read the tshuva. Look at the language he uses. Shom ba'otisville, makom sha'asirei hamelech netumin sham. You follow? That's real rabbinic Hebrew. Adasville, where the king's convicts are. And he says, in Adasville, Babanotenu Harabim, Nimtsasham Minyan Shomrei Torah Mitzvot. Wow. A minion. Babanotenu Harabim. He's not proud, he's saying. Like I'm saying, this is, look, this is reality. Sam Dershowitz told me a story. Sam grew up in Williamsburg, and he has an affinity for Williamsburg. And he's gone back at times, they call him in, people who need an expert in clothing chemistry, fabric chemistry. That Sam has a very unique PhD from Columbia U. So he tells me he was called in by this big factory there, Satma, and he gets to talk and becomes very friendly with one of the head honchos. And he says to the guy, look, you don't let your kids go to college. You don't teach them a profession. And this is about 40 years ago, this conversation happened. He says to him, what will your kids do? The guy says, it's an open Gemara. They'll be listim. They'll be thieves. In other words, this Satmar Chassid said to him, you're absolutely right. Not everyone can be a businessman. Not everyone can work with clothing. Satmar owns the high-tech industry in New York, right? 47, what's it called? 42nd Street Photo? I mean, it's unbelievable what they have. B&H, right, B&H. It's a square block. But not every, says, some of them will become, the Gemara says in Kedushin, you all know at the end of the first parak, that if you don't, and if he doesn't teach an umanut,
I doubt the rate of criminality is higher among Satmar than it is amongst them.
I doubt it too. I'm not saying that. Right. But he answered him, we shot. The guy says to him, don't be criminals. He says it's an open Gemara. And lo aleinu, here he describes a minion of Shomrei Torah Mitzvah. Now people tell me today there's much more than one minion.
You know,
this tshuva, he doesn't give the, let me see, he gives a year, it's 1989. So he says there's a minion Shomrei Torah Mitzvah. Ah, but you see, here's the fascinating point. I'll read the tshuva to you in a second. It's unbelievable. I'm going to show you Reb Meisha. Unbelievable what's come into the response literature. But you see, people in jail have time to think. Now, this works two ways. There are plenty of other Jews who don't know the first thing about Yiddishkeit. But when these Jews see Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, they start to ask questions. They have time to think. They're in jail. They're not running around making a living. It's not that they have to be at the office or they have to sell or they have to be at the factory, etc. Who are we? What are we? They start to ask. Now, you got to remember, as a frum Jew, whenever you see someone who's not frum and starts to ask questions, if you are really a frum Jew and know how to learn a little bit, you're going to feel a responsibility. Have to bring him closer. Ani tzarich l'karev oto. And this goes right down. In jail, it's pronounced because people have time to think. But there was a, again, it's a name you don't know anymore, Professor Charles Liebman. Charlie Liebman was the most famous Jewish sociologist, particularly American Jewish sociologist. He came in Aliyah in 69. He became famous, I believe some of you know. His most famous article that put him into the limelight was in the early 60s. And he deals with a case study of a young American Orthodox rabbi and why people like him and why people hate him. I'm the case study. When it says young rabbi, cross out young rabbi, write in Aaron Rothkopf. R-O-T-H-K-O-F-F. Fabulous study. And Charlie, is in his scholarship afterwards, deals with the whole problem of how Jews relate to one another. And he makes a golden point. Even a Satma has to care about every other Jew. Father, it's all right. It's not like a Lubavitcher. A Lubavitcher's trademark is caring about other Jews. Breslov, their trademark is bringing other Jews to Simcha. But even a Satma, if someone is Jewish, his mother is Jewish, you can't push him away and say, I don't care about him. You're part of Am Yisrael. And you see, this is a two-way street. The Jew who is not religious, who's suddenly thrown together with a million of religious Jews, who are they? What are we? Where do I come from? Now, in life, you're generally too busy. You hear the Balei Tshuva tell stories, I wanted to start Tshuva, I wanted to get involved, I was too busy. Finally, he woke up. But in jail, you have time to ask the question. And when you ask a question, it's a two-way street. Because the frum Jew, he can be frum. He can daven three times a day. He can put on tefillin. He can look at you. Say, what do I have to do? There's the Machal Shabbos, Ochlein Levedit and Treifon. But he knows you're a Jew. Worse than that, you're a Tinok Shenishba. What can he do? It's not your fault. You're the way you are. It's the way you were raised. The way you were brought up. The family. Your neighbors. Your friends. He can't push you away. He can't forget about you entirely. He has to answer your questions. And that's exactly what he says. There's a minyan shomrei Torah mitzvot. V'gam yesh misha b'nei Yisrael. Shechem tzrichim lehit karev l'Torah mitzvot, that they have to be from. And always in every crowd, let me tell you, there are always different types of Jews. Yes, Herbie.
At one point in Chicago, they had the whole shul and the rabbi in jail. Involved with the nursing home.
The nursing home. No, I don't know the whole shul, but I know that there
and
were
the rabbi,
with the Shpinka Rav, they arrested him in Los Angeles, not New York. 102 people. I know, it's a different story, but 102 people were arrested that day. So draw your own conclusions. If it wasn't the whole shul, it was very close to it. But you see, I give you another example. Psychology of people. When I, basic training, finally my day arrives, I have to report to the army, I have to report, some of you who did basic training, so you know you report to Rehov Rashi, that's where the army begins from there, they take you in a bus to the Basis Klita V'miyun in Tel HaShomer. So we come to Rehov Rashi, there must have been 100 different people that day. And we're waiting for the buses to come to take us to where we have to go next. And time is not a factor. Kumpaint of Kumogen, I come today, I come tomorrow, no one's rushing you, you've checked in. So we're sitting around. Fine, 100 people sitting around. So what do? I take out a Xerox I made of the Rav Zish Halacha, and I start learning. I'm the happiest guy in the world, I have Menuchat HaNefesh, no one can bother me, I have time, I want to try to master Isha Halacha. One guy jumps up and he says, what are we sitting here? Let's go around. Who didn't put on tefillin today? And I write about this in Washington. And in 1 minute, there are four people going around with tefillin. Chinach the tefillin hayom? Taniach. No, these guys are going into the army. No one said no. Every last person put on tefillin, waiting for the buses to come. So here's this description. That's human nature. Rakef leaders are litvak. He disappears into his own learning. He separates himself from the world. I'm poking fun at Rakef, but that's the reality. And the Chassidish Yisrael, there was a guy, Kitzitz, very famous name. He's Kintova. He's a great-great-great-great-grandson of the Talmud Mufak of the Baal Shem Tov, who came in Aliyah. Reb Gershon Kitzitz. His name is Reb Gershon Kitzitz. He was named after his great-great-great. He was one of the ones. There was another fellow there who became friendly with him. He pulled out Phil and a third. It was unbelievable. So right here in jail, there's one of the Haredim who's not satisfied to mind his own business, not satisfied to do his own davening, and every day he goes out of his way that as long as these convicts are in jail, they should put on tefillin. Okay? And now look, he describes, this is Reb Menashe Klein describing the situation as he was asked. So look what you have here. You have people who put on tefillin because this Haredim is bugging them. Let me use slang. He's a nudnik. All right? So fine. A Jew is going to put on tefillin. And they're walking around. They don't have kippot. They're not medatek and kashrut. Can you put tefillin on these people? Can you be makar of them? And then he throws in the magic word, V'ulai heim b'madrega shel tinok shenishpa. And you all understand, the world in which we live, truer words were never spoken. Truer words were never spoken. Bibi Netanyahu, I don't know whether he puts on tefillin every day, but believe me, the chinuch he received, Tinok Shinishba, I believe he's a graduate of the gymnasium in Yerushalayim on Rehov Keren Kayemet Yisrael. What was the chinuch they received? You take the kids in Tel Aviv, Chuldai was the principal of the top high school in Tel Aviv. The man, in my humble opinion, a Sonei Yisrael, a Sonei Dot, An enmity, yes, democracy, liberalism, but wow, and Supreme Court justices don't know Bialik, quote Bialik, more than the Jew has observed Shabbos. Shabbos has enabled the Jew to survive. Chaim Nachman Bialik, he's not exactly a Rav, a Rosh Yeshiva, a Chassidic Rebbe. But we can't get angry. These are tinokot shenishpa'u. So this Jew, so far. Now what's the question? So a guy puts on tefillin. Beautiful. Put a yarmulke on his head. No question. The guy eats treif. The guy doesn't observe Shabbos. But at least let him have the mitzvah of tefillin. Okay? Remember, we spoke about this with Alagula Valatura, with the Satmaruv at the Kotel and his opposition to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. We spoke about it, I don't know, last year, 2 years ago, whatever. That's not a problem. But watch. Now, you have 10 Jews, Haredim, in the jail, Shomer Torah Mitzvot, and this Jew, you have a Kohen, Shomer Torah Mitzvot, but you don't have a Levi, Shomer Torah Mitzvot. They daven, they lay in. A Kohen, yes. A Levi, no. In my shul, the Minyanai Daven 5:30, we generally have one Kohen, one Levi. If they're not there, the whole order is broken. Either we call up, I wind up getting Kohen, and or the Kohen gets Ben Kom Levi. Here you have a Kohen Shomer Torah mitzvah, Charedi, I'll use this word. I'm not being pejorative, don't misunderstand me. Charedi, Makvid Kala Kachamura. Except the money he robbed, but all right, he's in jail. And the Levi, you don't have. But then there's one guy, this description is like a movie. One inmate who goes Bigilui Rosh, and he says he is a Levi. Okay? Now, very interesting question. You have a Kohen from Davin three times a day, puts on tefillin, Shemesh Shabbos, Kashrut, the works, and then you have a Jew who's an ordinary American Jew, doesn't cover his head, not from at all, but yeah, he says...
They're both in jail,
obviously. And he says he is a Levi. Can you call him up Levi?
Why not?
Guy is an Amoritz.
But he's still in jail.
And he's still in jail. But this raises a different problem altogether. Originally, with the Shiva Kruim, with the people you call up the Torah, each one had a Leyan. And that's why each one makes a bracha. And if you've learned Shulchan Aruch and you've seen the Achronim, this is why you notice when you call someone up to the Torah, Talmud Chacham, he lays in an undertone. The Rav used to say, I lay in an undertone, but loud enough to drive the Baal Korah crazy. I'm quoting the Rav now with a sense of humor. This guy doesn't know anything. He's an Amoritz. He doesn't know how to lay in. He doesn't... You'll have to help him with the brachas. Can you call this guy up? Everyone else at the Minyan is a Haredi. Everyone else you call up knows how to lay in. They lay in an undertone. How can this guy be called up? But, and he quotes, you'll see the sources there, from Simon Kuflamet Hey, Haramach Osifu Miyim Yecholik Rotem HaShlich Tziba Mila B'mila Sagi B'kach. But Herb is right. Our minig is lahakel. We call up amayararets, we call up boors, we call up people who couldn't lay in at all, we call up everybody. So that from that point of view, the Mishnah Brura, the Magen Avraham, the Maharil, but from that point of view, even though he can't lay in, even though he's an amaretz, even though he couldn't read with the Baal Korah, you'd be allowed to call him up. So that is not a chisaron. All Jews, Amei Aretz, Talmidei Chachamim, able to lay in, not able to lay in, Bizman Hazel, we call everybody up and everyone makes Birchat HaTorah. But then he goes further. But the guy goes without a yarmulke all day. And this is chutzpah. What do you mean chutzpah? To go without a yarmulke? Avushtei. You ever heard that expression? Show me where it says you go without a yarmulke. There's no source in the world that a Jew has to wear a yarmulke. One of the earliest jokes I ever heard was from my first Rebbe in Yeshiva, Reb Michal Katz. I'll say it in English, but I heard it in Yiddish. What kind of question is that? Where is it written you have to wear a yarmulke? Vayelech Avraham. Avraham would go without a yarmulke? Impossible. As again on a yarmulke, Vayelech Avraham. So he says, yes, I know. Reb Menashe Klein says, yes, I know Bizman Hazeh, that I know the sources. I know that it's not a chiyuv to wear a yarmulke, but bizman hazeh, the yarmulke has become very, very important. And this Levi walks around without a yarmulke. Now, he throws something in here which is very interesting, but I just want to say, there's no question that a yarmulke, again, you see, there is... I don't want to use the word development, or you'll accuse me of being a conservative Jew. But there's no question there's a dynamic to the halachic Jewish life that a yarmulke, which is relatively unimportant compared to Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarak Mishpacha, a yarmulke today is a symbol of a Torah Jew. And it's very upsetting to me in my world. You take a look, Bennett, I'd love to buy him a bigger yarmulke. All the kids are emulating Bennett, the head of Bayit Yehudi. And he wears this, it's a little kippah, right? It's not a bottle top, it's better than that. But wear a yarmulke, wear something that you don't have to apologize for, quoting Rav Avram Shapiro, if you recall. Wear a proper yarmulke, let the world see. Be proud, okay?
So take into account who the population is of this person?
No. This is white collar. This is the section in Huntsville that's white collar. This is why there's so many from Jews there, that they have a whole section and they have kosher catering, have the works, mezitz, the levant, they have a dafyomi. People come out. People, right? People come out. They say, "Oh, I went through half of Shas in 4 years." You understand? It's not simple. I know. I was asked the shayla seriously. Someone got out in the five towns, and he gives a kiddush. So Talmud asked me, "Should he go to the kiddush?" I told him, "I want you to know. I don't know what to answer. I don't know. I wouldn't go to a kiddush of a guy getting out of jail. What's he boasting about?" On the other hand, if you feel a little coarse heart feeling and machloket, better go and don't cause machloket. But 1 second, 1 second. So now he says, and here Yitzhak will appreciate this, that a yarmulke is so important in our time that the American government got in touch with me. Nishalti Misarei HaMedina, Po B'Atzot HaBrit, B'Inyana Chayalim HaYisraelim. In the army, you were not allowed to cover your head indoors. And Jewish soldiers petitioned the army for the right to wear a kippah. And he wrote a tshuva, which was translated into English. He knew English as well, but I imagine someone styled his writing, telling the American army that a Jew today has to wear a kippah. And he says the army today permits Jews to wear kippah in the army. Now, I know my brother Yitzchak, in your time, what was going on in the army? Were there any Jews who wanted to wear a kippah all the time? No, you didn't have that. I know my brother was in the army.
No.
I know my brother was in the army during the Vietnamese period, and he wore a kippah at all times.
He was an officer, and he was protected.
No, he was not an officer. No, not Levy, my kid brother.
The one
is in Las Vegas.
Where was he?
He was in Hawaii. He was in communications. And he wore a kippah all the time, and he told me he would never let me use the word. When he got out of the army, so I once used a slang word for Afro-Americans. He said, "You can't use that word." I said, "Why not?" He says, "Let me tell you about the army." He says, "I wore kippah all the time, not just Shabbat Kashrut. I wore kippah." He said to me, Southerners, Missouri, would start anti-Semitic remarks. Big Afro-American guys would come over and say, "You say one more word to Stevie, you're dead." And these guys backed off.
I said the same thing at Fort Hood with a guy called Alan Chapman, who was an accountant. He could scrounge anything anywhere. And this fellow lit the Hanukkah candles every night in the bed. And the officer came around and said, "This is not authorized for you to have this candle on." The fellows surrounded the officer, wax. And they said, "He's religious. And we watch him light every night."
Wow, beautiful, beautiful. Amazing. Beautiful. So that's what he says here. That's what he says here. V'sof hitiru lahem, that they can wear a kippah in the army, and he's boasting he played a role in it.
But you know, JWB warned me that I would never get promoted if I wore a kippah in the army. I was a rabbi.
You were a rabbi. That's a terrible...
And when I got my Army Commendation Medal, I Xeroxed it and sent it off to the guy from the JWB. And I wrote on the bottom, Kippah et al.
Kippah et al. Beautiful. Kol hakavod to Rabbi Rubin. But then he quotes the Kala Rabati. He loves that source. You recall the source where two kids were walking in front of Gedolei HaTanaim, and one covetous said and one uncovetous said. And it was Rabbi. Remember, Rabbi Akiva says he's a Ben Nida and a Mamsa. And everyone looked at Rabbi Akiva. Why are you talking like that? And Rabbi Akiva gets hold of his mother, and he promises the mother his Olam Haba, and the mother reveals Ein Hachinami. At her wedding, she was an Ida, and her husband's friend seduced her. Shmamish, the kid, was a Ben Nida and a Mamsa. And here in the tshuva, he says that he was taught, the rumor in Torah circles is that who were they talking about? Jesus. That this person was Jesus. He has a very interesting commentary in brackets, something that every practicing rabbi has faced. What is the comment? O machloket, chupat nida is the kinyan tofes. Do you have to marry a woman and gain her as your wife when she's re'uya lebi'ah? Well, no, even a nida. According to the Rambam, chupat nida would not be tofeset. From this source, Kala Rabati, that he quotes, you see that chupat nida is tofeset. That if you have to perform a wedding and the kala is a nida, nevertheless the marriage is chal. Because how could the kid be a mamsa unless the chupat nida was valid? She married the man, but she couldn't sleep with him because he was from and she was a nida, and his friend seduced her. It shows that that marriage was tofes, was chal. Very fascinating. Yes, that in parentheses. Now, we'll see the end of the tshuva, but before I end off the tshuva, I want to show you something. You think this is a unique case? As far as I know, this is the first time Otisville has come up in response to literature. It's a very fascinating volume that I've quoted more than once over the last few years, and I thank Steve Gross for getting it to me because it's a rare volume. The volume is called Mesoret Moshe. You recall I've quoted it? What is Mesoret Moshe? His grandson, Mordechai Tendler, it's like a 700-page volume of private discussions that they had. Not tshuva that Reb Moshe wrote that were published, but private discussions between a grandfather and a grandson. Now, I know that Mordechai Tendler, there was, I don't have to tell you, was a whole situation in Muncie and women and never went to trial, but nevertheless, he left the RCA. So people often question me, is the volume reliable? I can only tell you that his father and his two uncles all signed on with their signatures and their handwriting that the volume is absolutely reliable. And I'm quoting Reb Moshe David Tendler, his father. I'm quoting Reb David Feinstein, his uncle, and Reb Reuven Feinstein, his uncle. So I would consider this volume reliable. Remember, he was never found guilty. It's an open question. I don't want to go into it. Mesoret Moshe, Daf Chav Chet, dealing with Hilchat Tefillah. And here, Reb Moshe tells him, a guy was in jail, a frum Jew in jail, And he asked me, can I daven at a minyan in jail with just a few of the people, the Shomrei Shabbos? It's a classic, the same shaila I had when Maplewood began. I didn't have a minyan of Shomrei Shabbos. Here's a guy in jail. There are a few Shomrei Shabbos.
In jail.
But can you daven? Can they be counted for the minyan? Hey Shiv Rabbeinu, Rav Moshe answered, you can count all those who are not religious can be counted. The only one that you can't answer and main to is an over averot lahachis. His bracha is not a proper bracha. And here you know what Rav Moshe is saying. There's a big difference between someone who's a mumma lahachis to someone who's a mumma l'teyavon.
But they're all lahachis, meaning they're out there, they're shogging.
Listen, and sitting in this room, let's say we're all Shomer Shabbos, let's say we're all Shomer Kashrut, but one time we stole it, doesn't mean we're bad, it doesn't pasul us out, it means there's one Avera we have to do tshuva from and ask Mechilah on Yom Kippur. He's not talking about Madoff, but a Madoff would be a bad example as far as someone who didn't do tshuva probably. But if he's not a Mumma Lahachis, you can count him. And a Mumma L'Teyavon is another, it's a restatement of Tinok Shenishba. You understand? The average Jew is a Tinok Shenishba. He doesn't know anything.
But not these guys in prison.
I'm talking in Shabbat and Kashrut, you're talking on money issues. Okay, on this money issue. But he's in prison now. Maybe he did Shuvah.
Can you call a guy a full guy who has an affair with a mistress?
We're not calling them frum, but we're talking about whether you count them for minyan. We're talking about whether you can count them for minyan. A guy, I had plenty of balabatim in my time who cheated on their wives, but nevertheless they were counted for minyan. Let's not talk about it. Don't ask. I had two couples from England who had emigrated to the United States. These guys were in business together in Manhattan in the garment industry. And many times they would call their wives that they're coming home late, the bridges are closed, there's heavy traffic, lo hayav, lo nivra. But their wives didn't know enough to turn on WINS and hear what the traffic situation is. One couple went back to England, I lost all track of them. One couple remained in America, and the wife is still alive. And if I ever get to Hollywood, Florida again, I would like to look her up, because she was very kind to me in the rabbinate. She was president of the sisterhood. But these are Maisim Lo Aleinu, I don't have to go further. Okay, so Reb Moshe writes that if it's a Mumma Lahachis who hates religion and... So he makes a bracha, you don't answer main. But if it's a mumma l'teyavon, but Rav Moshe says, and this is well known, that if davening for the Omid, better to have a Shomer Shabbos if you can. You see, because davening for the Omid, you're making requests of God. You're praising God. You're requesting. It's very awkward to have a Mechalel Shabbos stand there and ask God, Slach lo avinu ki chatanu, if you're being Mechalel Shabbos before and the Shabbos afterwards. But Rav Moshe...
Would Rabbi Metzger to a minyan?
Well, one second. But Rabbi... Rav Moshe says, Habo min astam, efshal lismoch, sherov hachavshiyim einam lahachiz, befrat be'America. And I consider that a very fascinating statement by Rav Moshe. In Europe, you had the maskilim, you had the secular Zionist rebellion, you had people that had an enmity towards Torah. Torah is old-fashioned, Torah is outdated. Those people were lahaches. You don't find people like that in America, in the modern world, in the Western world. And Avi, I write about this in Washington, I still experienced that enmity, that hatred. I was doing my research in Rabbi Revel. I was sitting in the YIVO library. Today it's already merged with other libraries. It's all one with YU, with all the research papers. But then it was a separate, it was on the Upper East Side, as I recall. It was a separate institution. I'm sitting there with my yarmulke, and I was a kid in my 20s, and there's a lady in her 70s sitting there, and she's staring at me and staring at me. And finally, she couldn't control herself, and she burst out in Yiddish, hating kippot, how dare you wear it, hating religious Jews. You still made a bracha for the Tzar. That's, you understand what she was saying? And boy, a revolutionary, and I'm sitting there, I said, madam, I never met the Tzar. Ich hab nicht angeguckt, the Funyun sein Panim, I never looked at his face. But I could understand that she saw the yarmulke, it was a red flag. But Reb Moshe, I hold very, very important. When it comes to America, these are people, Mumale Teyavon. It's very rare you're going to find a Mumala Haches. And even though Yitzhak will shout at me, look at some of the people in Chovevei Torah, and look at their statements regarding this issue and that issue, but it's Tinok Shenishba. The Western world has influenced them. The Western world.
Say that. I say the Bible is not written by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. What is that?
That's a real problem when he goes that far already, but that's not Avi Weiss, Chas v'Chalila. Okay, but then in the last paragraph, listen to this, but that you don't have a Levi, and the only Levi is that Jew you're describing, and you're in prison. You can't bring in other people. For who shat chadachak, it would appear to me, if he comes into the Beis HaMedrash when you're davening, and he takes part in whatever fashion, and he covers his head for at least the majority of the prayer, and certainly has to cover his head when they call him up to the Torah, and he would appear to me, this is not a Mumala Haches, this is a Mumala Teyavon, and therefore one can be lenient, and one can call him up to the Torah, and he can help you finish the minyan and finish the davening. And he says, Menashe Klein, this is the Hasidic soul speaking. Umihu, kedai ledaber al lev hanahar hazeh, ulai yashuv laHashem v'yirachamehu. It's worth talking to him, being nice to him, being makarev him, and maybe that we can bring him closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Maybe it will work. So you see, this is, if you want to understand Chassidut, if you want to understand Chabad, if you want to understand the Baal Shem Tov, this was the original outreach of the Baal Shem Tov of Chassidus. Today, it's very fascinating, in the Hasidic world, most Hasidic courts are still very inward-looking, sort of ghettoized. You can understand why. The modern world came in, interrupted their life, pulled away, millions of Chassidim became Chiloniyim, Maskilim, secular Zionists, and they had to retreat. Lubavitch somehow was always different. Maybe it goes back to the fifth Lubavitch Rebbe, Rav Shalom Dov Be'er, organizing Tomchei Tumimim. There always was that feeling of outreach. Lubavitch, very, very different. And you can see Rav Menashe Klein why he was such a devotee of the Rebbe and their relationship, you can see that outreach Hasidic feeling. Interestingly enough, in modern times today, as time moves on, Bells has become more conscious of outreach. And in Bells already, there is some movement within to reach out. So someone said to me, yes, you're right, but it's very different than Lubavitch. And I said, what's the difference? And he said something very insightful to me. Lubavitch reaches out to every Jew. They are colorblind, Sephardic, Ashkenazic, every Jew, Georgian, Bukharan, Lithuanian, Hungarian, every Jew, Bahasheh Husham. Bells reaches out to those who descend from Bells of Hasidim. It's a little bit different. Ger, you have no outreach whatsoever that I know of. And Ger is very powerful in the state of Israel. Ger is undoubtedly the largest Hasidus. It's very fascinating. And Ger, if you walk on the streets of Gula and you see Ger Hasidim, they speak Hebrew to each other. It's amazing how they're integrated, they're happy, they're in the Knesset, they're in the government today. Minister of Health, Litzman.
He's Ger.
Of course he's Ger. He's a Ger Hasid from Borough Park. And very integrated.
He was born in America?
I believe he was born in America. If not, he's a refugee from here, but I believe he's born in America. I think his parents are refugees, obviously. And you didn't know that? Of course he's an American, 100%, just as American as you are. You don't hear the accent in his Hebrew. And it's amazing how popular a minister he is.
He's related to my brother.
He's been very successful.
I'm saying he's the most popular minister. And Litzman's related to your brother? Yeah, very interesting. And Bells, when you hear the Belser, you hear a lot of Yiddish. I don't say total Yiddish, but you hear a lot of Yiddish. Very fascinating.
My family was Belser.
Yeah, my family, my wife's father was born a Belzer Yingel. And I'll tell you something else about Belz that's very fascinating, and the world doesn't seem to realize this. Everyone is arguing about female rabbis, right? You're all familiar with the argument going on. There are women today who are literally not just, they're more than rabbis, they're preachers, they're teachers, women. From the Haredi world, not from some partially Tzioni Dati world. But you should know the Belzer Rebbetzin feels like a Rebbe. She receives kvitlach. They say men, women wait online to consult with her. It's fascinating. There was a female Hasidic Rebbe, who gave me the name, Rachel Leah Webermacher. She she lived here 100 plus years ago. She was like a Rebbe. They listed her in the census under the Turks' occupation. Spiritual leader. She recepted Kvitlach. Then you have the preachers. No? You have Rav Kanievsky's wife, Zichrona Levracha, Rebbetzin Batsheva Kanievsky, Rav Elyashiv's daughter. I heard her speak. I go to YouTube. Maybe they have clear. I heard her on Israeli television. Oh my, you
what
should
was
have
she
speaking
heard her.
About her. What are you talking? Torah, life, Shabbos, Kashrut. Then they pleaded with her not to speak. She cries too much. They said, you need the professionals who know how to lekarev. Her daughter is today with professionals. Mizrahi, what was her name? Tamima. She went to Chorev. She was a year behind my youngest daughter. She's fabulous. And no one criticizes. It's amazing. In the Haredi world, they speak.
They're very
and they organize the Hafrashet Challah. I think that's ingenious. Hafrashet Challah, a woman's mitzvah. They do it all together. And I've seen these women interviewed. I mean, it's a sight to see. And they ask them, how come at every Hafrashet Challah you have some very famous personalities? Do you only outreach the famous personalities? I couldn't get over the answer. So she answered beautifully. She said, look, it's like politicians. Politicians, suddenly movie stars speak up for politicians. What does a movie star know about politics? But people know these famous people, their opinion is worth listening to. If we have a firmest personality join us for Fresh Challah, it makes a bigger impression than someone who is not known. I think that's a very clever, intelligent answer. And let me end off. You have the Breslova Mizrahi. I mean, her story, she was a TV personality, a radio personality. What's her full name? Yamima. Terrific personality. So you know how she became from? I mean, the story's unbelievable. She writes about it in her autobiography that she and her husband were conquering the world. He was writing TV scripts. They had endless money. And they were sick and tired of the tension of living in Israel, and they wanted to get away. So they decided they'll go to Holland. It was the winter. We'll go for a few days to Holland. No, money's not a factor. They bought tickets. They go to Holland, go to Amsterdam, and they see in Amsterdam too many Jews. They said, no, let's go to the furthest northern part of Holland. And they go to the furthest northern part, one train a day in the height of winter, December. And they come to this train station, and they ask the train master, can you recommend a hotel? He laughs at them. He says, a hotel? No one comes here in the winter. Our hotels only function in the spring and summer. But he says, you have a problem. There's no train going back until tomorrow. You can't get back to Amsterdam. So he says, you know what? I'll go down the block. There's a boutique hotel here, which is closed now. Maybe he'll open up for you. The guy comes back and he says, look, he's going to do you a favor. Give him a half hour. He wants to clean up a room. He'll give you a room for tonight. So that is a true story. They come to the hotel, and the man is going upstairs. He says, give me another minute. Let me just check that they cleaned it properly. Everything is okay. You know, the Dutch are very marked on cleanliness, like Germans. And as the man is coming downstairs, what language did they speak to him when they arrived? English, right? The international language. As he's coming downstairs, he hears they're talking Hebrew. So he goes up, he says, you're Jews? They said, yes, we're Israelis. He says, come into my office. And in his office is the Hanukkah menorah lit with the candles of that night. And his wife said to the husband, God is speaking to us. Can't run away from our Judaism. And that's how their return began. And they became Breslov. There has to be something in Breslov that's very powerful. It attracts so many of these artistic types, the artists, the musicians, something very powerful. And I have to bow, Litvak, to me, let's be happy. I can't understand that. Rak besimcha, besimcha tamid. I don't know. But it attracts. And a Musa Shmuas I'll give from Rav Lesson, I'll attract two people here in the classroom.
They're both Israeli born?
Yeah. Died in the wood Israelis. So to reiterate, first of all, I want to tell everyone next week, we're meeting in the auditorium. It's a public lecture.
What time?
5:15. Exactly 5. I'll begin. I told them upstairs I'm beginning exactly on time because they're fencing me in time-wise. I told them I wanted to do something real big. I need an hour and a half. So they're giving me an hour. I'll sneak a little bit more time. I don't know, an hour's not enough. But they have a big program at night. Ari Berman is speaking, Baruch Hashem. But I'm leading off. It's on Yerushalayim. Tomorrow it's $99,000 linked to the shekel to get into class. Wait till you see what I have tomorrow. If anyone needs a master's thesis I'll give you enough information tomorrow that you can take it further and do a master's thesis on contemporary Jewish civilization or history at Hebrew University. And the next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, the Sunday class is special, the Monday class is normal. Our problem looming ahead is when the President of the United States, Trump, comes here, when Mr. Donald Trump comes, I don't know if we can have class that Monday. We have to see when they're going to close the streets, etc. But what? They'll close everything off. Like over. Lagboma. I have to ask if there's class here or not. On Lagboma, what's the minicare? Is there class? I don't know. I think there is. I think there's a regular class. Okay. Now, next week, so in this week's class dedicated to Yosef Jacobs, to the Jacobs family, wonderful, wonderful people. What did we do? We dealt with the Machleket, the Rav, and the Rav Menashe Klein over a very simple issue, when you can read Torah on Monday and Thursday. Then we got into Adasville. We haven't finished yet. I have a little bit more to do, and I have to show you very fascinating who can read the Torah, who can't read, who's an Amaretz, who's a Boor, what the difference is. Show you the Chayyadim next week. And then we get involved with Chabad again. Only Chabad, the questions that come up. And there the person asking the question is someone that I write about in detail in Washington. Shmuel Pesach Bogomilsky. Yitzchak, by the way, the ad appeared about next Sunday on page 32 of Torah Tidbits. It's in very, very small print. You gotta take off your glasses or take a magnifying glass.
Now, here is the book that you gave Michael and me. I got it. It was, you would you like it?
Yeah.
The one about
Open Orthodox.
It wasn't written well.
No,
but it's a lot of documents.
Page, great.
Okay, if anyone wants, Michael, one second. This is when the Beit HaLevi died.
Yeah.
The obituary that appeared in 1982 at that time. Very fascinating. This is the Beit HaLevi of Yosef Dov HaLevi, 1882. And this is a YU Mismach who just died. I knew him. Myron Rakowitz was rabbi of a Sfadik shul in Brooklyn. Wonderful, wonderful individual. And I knew him. He was Vic Solomon's Kavruta. They went in together for the Oral Bechina with the Rabbi. So it's a whole world gone by. But it's a nice article that appeared in Hamodia on Rabbi Rakowitz. If anyone wants it, you're
was
welcome to it.
Was aware how intimidating he was?
What about the Rabbi?
And when he came in for a Bechina...
So Dr. Belkin sat there and calmed him down and calmed you down. And I can tell you when Sal Schulzen went in for his bechina, he was an orphan. He'd lost his father, and Dr. Belkin knew him. Dr. Belkin told him, "Du soll machen es schweig. You be quiet. Ich werde reden feig."
Oh.
So when the Rav would start asking him, Dr. Belkin would start to answer, and he would throw in, and Schulzen would open his mouth once, and Belkin would take over. So that was Dr. Belkin's role, to squeeze the mismach through. I can tell you, not for publication, I don't want to mention the name, obviously. As far as I know, only one person ever got smicha from yeshiva who knew, really didn't know how to learn. And the story is very simple. This person, Zichrono Livracha, I taught his children, wonderful individual. His father, they were related to the Rebbe, distant relatives. And they had come to America very 100 plus years ago, did very well. And the father was a trustee of the seminary, but was a Shomer Shabbos, but a trustee of the seminary. The kid, the son, became totally from, and he switched to yeshiva after college. He said to his father, "I want to get smicha, and I want to get it from Yeshiva University, not JTS." So the kid switched. And, you know, he really had no background in learning. So they helped him. Then he comes in for his oral, and the Rav rips him apart. Mm-hmm. You know, the kid didn't know much. So Dr. Belkin, this is what circulated in the yeshiva. Dr. Belkin told the Rav, Beryl, ich keinmal bet für mich gar nicht. I never ask anything from you. Aber damals, ich darf auf dem Smicha fern. This is for the goods for the yeshiva. It's for the yeshiva's good, so they gave him Smicha. Oh. And he later became a member of the Board of Trustees of Yeshivas of Chochanan. His own son studied in this kollel many years ago, got Smicha from the yeshiva. His daughter was a tzaddeket. She married a YU musmach. So that was the only
time. Why did they want to do it? What was he planning to do?
Well, nothing. He was a businessman. He went into business.
Oh, but he just wanted to have smicha
from YU. Right. They understand. And but Yitz asked a good question. The Rav was very intimidating. People want Melba toast. They couldn't even it's Melba toast and tea until they finished the bechina. The one time. We used to stay outside the door. It was Dr. Belkin's office, conference room, where it was on the first floor of the main academic center. I can show you where today. It's where the steps go up, right to your right. So one time, there was a fellow, Yitz Ladowski. So Yitz goes in for his bechina, and 2 minutes later, he walks out. So I say to him, Yitz, what happened? And Yitz was like this. Went back to the base merger. And I write about him in Washington. He was the biggest matmid. He knew everything by heart. We found out later, they asked him one question, and he rattled off the Shach and Taz word by heart. So the Rav said, no, min de kentas du kenstals, you know everything. Arise, we darf nicht the Mevatel sein Zeit jetzt. We have to waste time asking you questions. That's how he did the Bechina. Everyone went in two together. There was Duvi Hartman went in with Nassim LaBelle. So I see Nassim, whenever I dub Mincha Marav and up the block from my house, there's Nassim LaBelle with a black hat, black, he's a Bronx boy. I don't even know if his parents were Shem Shabbos. I hear that Tzaddik. His grandson got married with a Becker Schöne Streimel. And Nassim said to me, we didn't even know if we'd remain Jewish. And I'm Zeichem, my grandson, he was Duvi's Chafrasa. So you can imagine how Duvi.
What happened to Duvi?
Duvi was by far the brighter, right? Duvi was Duvi Hartman. Who would go and dream 60, 70 years later? Where Lobel is and where Hartman is, you know, even Hartman alive. So that's life. He's a lefty and he's an Amoret, so what? That's life. You see what's going on in the Knesset when they ripped apart the parent. Oh, God, it's so sad.
Who
you don't know, the parents, two Chavrei Knesset jumped on the bereaved parents whose bodies of their children are not back
yet.
Oh,
yeah.
So, I mean, that's life. Mendaf hat Mesechel, Mendaf sein Mussenik. I always tell my grandchildren, have you ever seen your grandfather fight with anyone? I fought in 61, I was in the rabbinate. But I was a young kid, I didn't have any Seichel. So I write about it in Washington. But since 61, I've never fought with anyone.
You gotta have emotion, and anger is part of emotion.
Yeah, but anger has to be
negative emotion.
Anger.
And you say you don't fight. Don't you have an emotion when somebody does wrong and you just say
look, no one has to tell me I don't have emotion, and no one has to tell me I don't tell. I in front of a microphone, in front of a class, I'm a lion. But that's public. To an individual, I'll never embarrass him, never tell him off. Still a hate. I've had enough problems over the years with students. I've students committed suicide. Yeah, I have no idea what a Rebbe has gone through. I had a chaver who came to see me in 71. I was very sick. I had 104 temperature. I told him, I'll solve the problem next week. Let me recover. The next day, he committed suicide. All right, anyway.
I had committed suicide a few years ago in your building?
Yeah, that's my building. Two people committed suicide, but that had nothing to do with me.
That was sad.
But It's sad.
But can you imagine, you go into the Rav and the Rav says to you, what Gemara should I ask you questions on? Well, you know what that means? It means he knows it all.
He knows it all. That's
so right. What Gemara should I ask you questions? You say Shabbos, he asks you Shabbos. You ask, you say Pesach, or ask him Pesach.
Let me put it to you this way. The Rav did not have the Lubavitcher Rebbe's personality. You understand? That's the good way to put it. The Rebbe was very, very special. The Rebbe, I told someone, we said last week, didn't I say it in class, that Rav Huttner, if you sat down in his presence, they'd rip you, stand
right.
You.
But the Rav gave respect to Rav Lesson. I never forgot that Rav Lesson came in. The Rav quietly sat
and heard the shir with such derech eretz. Absolutely,
that, I never forgot that.
All right, let's end off when we meet again tomorrow in health and happiness. Das v'danya, and it should be a peaceful Yom Zikaron.
Okay, so here you have it.
Yom Atzmaut. Okay, I'm going to.